sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning and happy Saturday to everybody out there. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. You guys know where it is. I do my show every Saturday. I'm in the Letterman's Jacket Room off to the right-hand side. You walk in and you're going to see all the cool stuff here at First String Sports. Baseball equipment, softball equipment, football, obviously basketball stuff. If you need shirts, shorts, they got that all here at First String Sports. They've been my day one sponsors. They really, really appreciate them tremendously. I'm looking at Letterman's jackets from Sanger West, Clovis West, Liberty, Sunnyside, Fresno Christian to my right, Edison, Hoover, Matilda Torres, the jacket that's shared by four different schools, Central, Selma, Kalinga, and Woodlake, the orange and black and white. All right, again, thanks to First String Sports. Want to also give the weather report right now, thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating. Currently 78 degrees. It actually feels a little bit hotter than that. We're going to have a high of 94. If you guys have checked the forecast, Sunday, tomorrow, we got a nice day as well. Drops down to 88. And then did you guys see Wednesday and Thursday, what they're going to do to us? Wednesday, 106, jumping from 94 on Tuesday to 106. And then Thursday's like, no, Wednesday, hold my beer. We're going to go up to 108. 108 degrees this Thursday. And then, hey, just 101 the next day and then drop down to 94. So anyway, be prepared for that. The summer months are upon us. June 1st, year of our Lord 2024. This is my final show of the school year. I'm happy to say we're going to keep running it back next year, next school year. My first show is going to be on August 10th, starting year number four. So going to take a little bit of a break. Obviously, the high schools are, so there's not a lot of high school reporting out there to do. And I need a break as well. I'm a teacher, and so I'm getting a little bit of my summer off. I am teaching summer school. But, yeah, August 10th, we're returning. This is my last show of the school year. And what I like to do on my last show is I like to wrap up. I like to have some top 10 lists or top 6 lists, actually what I'm going to do. But it's been a fantastic year, Lots and lots of stories, lots of things to unpack, lots of champions out there, obviously. So this is kind of a year in review. So what's going on? Who are we going to talk to? What are we going to talk about? After the break, I have my top 6 stories in high school sports this year. Well, why 6? Well, because I had trouble deciding between the last two for the 5 spots. So I'm like, I'll just make the executive decision. And I'll just have 6. 3 of them are like those positive stories that we love to talk about, right? Success stories, so to speak. 3 of them are, I wouldn't use the word controversial, but 3 of them are like, not the most positive stories. I think you guys are, if you're familiar with high school sports this year in the central section, your mind's probably racing, I wonder what his 3 are. I think you guys can figure out at least 2 of them. Might be surprised by 1 of them. So after the break, I'm going to run down my top 6 stories of the high school sports season. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to welcome Bullard softball coach and 1998 national champion from Fresno State, Jamie Maxey. Recently won her 500th game. She got multiple central section championships. I was able to talk with her, when was that, Thursday? Yeah, Thursday. Bullard had a scrimmage, right? They had the skeleton pads on and those light helmets. No contact. So I was invited that, so I decided to check it out. We know they got a new coaching staff over there. Hint, hint. That might be one of my top 6 high school stories of the year. And it was fun. It was fun, first of all, to know that football is back in the air. And we know there's 7-7 going on. Heck, these guys are going to be practicing in full pads in a month or two. So it was fun to get a sneak peek of Bullard football. And Coach Jamie Maxey was there. And so it's Coach Maxey. I've talked to her a few times. Coach Maxey, how you doing? So we had a great conversation. What I really appreciated about Coach Maxey, usually I'm the one asking questions, right? And I'm I want to know details. I want to know about their history in whatever sport. I want to know, how their season went, all those things. But Coach Maxey actually was the one that was asking me a lot of questions, asking about what's radio like and asking about my daughters. My daughters go to Bullard. One's already graduated. Two have graduated. My bad. So I really, really appreciated that about her. Fantastic coach, an even better person. Look forward to talk to her around 10:35 or so. Top of hour number two hours, McKay Mattson, Braden Bitter. They've been in the news a lot. Clovis North Studs. Why have they been in the news? Well, McKay Mattson was a double state champ in both the shot put and the discus. And his best friend, who's a senior, McKay Mattson, only a junior, plays second in discus. And if you guys watch any of the news broadcasts, any of the sports broadcasts from our great local sportscasters, they had a great bit on the state track meet and interviewed both those guys. And McKay Mattson is as humble as it gets, man. He was emotional. He was emotional talking about his friend, Braden Bitter, and how they've challenged each other throughout the years and how they made each other better. So can't wait to talk to both those guys. They're coming in here to First String Sports at about 11:05 or so. Bottom of hour number two, probably no guess who I'm bringing in. Gabe Camarillo, who now works for Fox 26, a local station. He had a show here. He was my producer. We broadcasted many, many games over the last couple years. Basketball games, football games, a couple baseball games as well. Well, Gabe is still in tune with high school sports. So bringing in Gabe, and he's going to bring in his own top five. I only gave him top five. Top five high school stories of the year. And we're going to match up. He doesn't know mine. I don't know his. So we're going to see how many we share. But I'm going to give him a voice for what he thinks are the top stories. And we'll talk about high school football. We'll talk about some of the great baseball games that we were able to cover this year as well. Speaking of baseball, I'm going to run down a few of the champions that I wasn't able to do last week. So last Saturday, there were actually three games that are going to be played that day, three softball games as well. There's a 12 o'clock, a 3:30, and then the 7:30 game. So we broadcasted the Liberty and Clovis West baseball game. Liberty came out swinging. Clovis West actually punched first, scored three runs in the bottom of the second inning. But Liberty and their 40 home runs coming in that game as a team, they showed what? Hit a three-run bomb. They swung the bats really, really well. Ended up with that 9-6 win. So congrats to Liberty Bakersfield for winning the D1 title. Now, Clovis West still made it to, was still chosen to play in the state playoffs. They played at number one Granada, and they barely lost 2-1 in the eighth inning. So we know that Clovis West could play with anybody in the state. Liberty, they're continuing. They're still in the state playoffs. In fact, they are in the D2 SoCal championship game today against Moorpark. All right, so Liberty's made it all the way in the SoCal D2. I'm surprised they weren't putting D1. But anyway, congrats to Liberty for winning the D1 championship. Congrats to Chavez as well. They defeated Lindsay in the 3:30 game on Saturday, 1-0. It was a really, really tight game. Liberty Madera won their second straight title in D4. They beat Independence 3-2 in eight innings. That wasn't easy. Down to their last strike, they won that game. They tied it in the seventh and won it in the eighth. A little bit of softball news. Congrats to Clovis North. Won their second title in 4 years. Defeated defending champ Central. Woodlake defeated Porterville to win their title. I believe that was in D5. So congrats to Woodlake. I mentioned Liberty Bakersfield still alive in the baseball playoffs. No softball teams are still alive. Also Chavez. Chavez plays Shafter in their state division in D5. And they won, and they're playing Azusa today. Bakersfield Christian, who won D2, they are in the championship game, playing St. John Bosco, who's number one, in D3. You guys know St. John Bosco from football, right? Them and Mater Dei have been battling it for years, usually number one and number two in the nation. But St. John Bosco, D3, in the state playoffs, I don't know. That one doesn't make sense. Oh, I want to mention City County Baseball is Sunday. 6 o'clock, Chancy Park. Tom Donald is coaching. Jim Cranford is coaching county. Tom Donald, the city. So check that out. That's always a really fun event, right? It's one last time for a lot of players. Get to play on that nice field, Chancy Park. So that pretty much puts a wrap on the baseball season. One more thing before we hit a break. Hope you guys are following the story. I mentioned her just kind of in passing, but you guys know there's a golf prodigy from Chowchilla. She's 15 years old. Her name is Asterisk Tally, and she's taking the U.S. Women's Tournament this year by storm. Currently, she's tied for fifth. There's nine ahead of her. She's top plus one for the tournament. Actually, no, she's tied with nine different girls, women, for fifth, and there are four ahead of her. And like I said, she's taking it by storm. I Googled Asterisk Tally, and you know, if you hit news, all the latest stuff comes up about that particular subject. So look at these headlines that are going on these national publications about Asterisk Tally from Chowchilla. Golf Channel, or golf.com, I should say, said she's a high school freshman. Now she's beating golf's best at the U.S. Women's Open. NBC Sports, can we get a homework extension? Asterisk Tally, 15, has a USWO to try and win. Golf Week, Asterisk Tally, 15, having the time of her life, contending at U.S. Women's Open. Sporting News, who is Asterisk Tally? Everything to know about the 15-year-old LPGA golfer near the top of the U.S. leaderboard. Those are national headlines. Those aren't local headlines. Those are national. So we might have the next golfing phenom right here from the valley. She's teeing off at 108 today. I'm going to try to check that out. You see her interviewed. She's amazing, right? She's got the braces. She's got the charisma. She's got the innocence. Everyone's fallen in love with Asterisk Tally. So that is a really, really cool story that we're for sure going to watch over the weekend. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to have my top six stories from the high school season. You're listening to Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN, your local sports leader. Bill Simpson. Good stuff here. All right. So, talking about Asterisk Tally, the phenom from Chowchilla, making waves in the U.S. Women's Open. Just cool stuff. I would encourage everybody to go, go Google her name. Watch what they're saying about her on all the networks. So, just an incredible story. All right. Speaking of incredible stories, I put together a list of my top six high school sports stories of the year. Now, this is the school year, not the calendar year. So this is school year that started way back in August. All right. So here at 1430 ESPN, obviously, we're high school sports centric with all of our local stuff that we do. We were able to broadcast, I wrote it down here, 16 football games, 10 basketball games, and 9 high school baseball games this season. So we've seen a lot of stuff, talked to a lot of people, talked to a lot of coaches, talked to a lot of athletes as well. So number six, remember when LeBron James joined the Miami Heat? That famous press conference, well, he proclaimed, we're not going to win one, we're not going to win two, we're not going to win three. Went all the way up to seven, right? Later they said they were joking, they're just screwing around. But a lot of people took that serious. All right, come on, guy. Let's go. Be real here. Well, we have a team here in the Central Section that has won 12 straight Valley titles, right? 12 straight Central Section titles. That's the Clovis West girls basketball program. They're my number six story of the high school season. They won their 12th. It wasn't easy. They beat St. Joseph 45-41 at Selden Arena on February 24th, all right? Just an incredible, incredible run. Who's going to beat these girls, all right? So Clovis North has beat them in league. Clovis beat them in league. But they really haven't been tested. I mean, that 45-41 game was pretty darn close. It was tight. I felt like Clovis West did have it all the way. But they've won 12 straight. So the last time they lost, or didn't win, I should say, was 2012. Let me throw some references out there just to see how far it's been, how long it's been since they didn't win, the girls program didn't win a Central Section title. The average price of a family home in 2012 was $211,131. Now, what is it? $349,218. The average price of a family home. I'm sure a lot of you guys are nodding. Yep, yep, I know. House prices. We've been priced out of houses, right? A dozen eggs, 2012, was $2.15. Today, $6.05. Two beefy five-layer burritos at Taco Bell, which I know you'll pay for later if you know what I mean. Back then, they cost $2.59. That's dirt cheap. Right now, one costs $3.69. Just for what? And the number one movie back in 2012 was The Avengers. Actually, it doesn't seem like that long ago, The Avengers played in theaters. That was the last time the Clovis West girls did not win a Central Section title. The architect of it all, of course, is Craig Campbell, an amazing coach. He sent numerous players to the college level, have one of the most impressive streaks in California history. If they win another one in 2025, they'll move into a tie for second in state history, three behind Mission Prep's record. They hold the record, Mission Prep, who is now in our section. And perhaps most impressive of all, they are a public school. They are not a private school like the Mater Dei's, the St. John Bosco that I just mentioned, the Archbishop Mitty's, the De La Salle's, right? They are a public school. So number six story is Clovis West. Girls, amazing 12 straight Central Section titles. One of the most controversial endings in playoff history is my number five story of the year, Matilda Torres and Shafter football, their semifinal D4 game. All right, Shafter came in as a defending champs, undefeated at 11-0. The game went to OT in Shafter, tied at 35. Shafter scores first, kicks the extra point. Torres answers with a touchdown, decides to kick the extra point. Now here's where the chaos and the mayhem and the controversy happens. So the snap is too high, went awry. The holder, who happened to be the quarterback, scrambled, was about to get sacked, threw it up to a player that was waving his hands in the end zone, about 2 yards deep in the end zone. He caught it. Celebration ensued, as what you would anticipate. It was a successful conversion. Referees raised their hand. Pandemonium on the field. Like I said, they celebrate. It's going wild. It's crazy. However, it was the long snapper and the team's leading rusher who caught the pass. Not one of the refs recognized that, called the game, walked off the field, kind of jogged off the field. Ineligible. None of the refs recognized it. It was a mixed crew. They weren't used to reffing with each other. Nobody recognized that was not only long snapper, but the guy that got a lot of carries in the backfield when Torres was on offense. Right? Shafter and the pandemonium didn't realize it right away. A coach went up to Coach Gerald Perucci, the head coach, said, "Coach, I'm pretty sure that was the long snapper. Shouldn't have counted." By that time, the referees were off the field. The AD and the head coach for Shafter found the referees, talked with them. They finally realized their error. They thought that it could be overturned by the CIF. CIF actually had a meeting. They granted a meeting on that Sunday, so Friday to Sunday, granted a meeting with administration from Madera, administration from Shafter. After a couple hours, they made their cases. And CIF, they have bylaws that they can't overturn it. When a referee signal game over, when they're off the field, it's done. There's nothing that can be done. They can do. It wasn't overturned. So huge controversy. Matilda then went on and won the D4 football title. Lots of thoughts on that one. People have different thoughts. What's the right thing to do in that situation? Good arguments on both sides, right? What kind of a statement would Torres have made? Because you know they realized that it was their center, their long snapper, that caught the pass. It should have been illegal. Torres knew that right away. Of course they did. What would it look like if they would have went up to the referees at that time and said, "You know what, guys? I hate to do this to my players, my program, my coaches. However, my guy wasn't supposed to catch that pass. He was illegal. Game should have been over." But they didn't. Call stands. Torres wins it. So lots of ways to look at that game. So that's my number five, controversy between Shafter and Matilda Torres football. All right, number four. What if I told you that a football team in 2020 during the COVID season. They only played three football games all year and lost all three. The last two by scores of 51-3 and 69-0 to Central. And 4 years later, those guys won their first 13 football games of the year, playing a D1 schedule, and became the D1 Central Section champs. Well, that's the Clovis North football team. And the year 13-1, they lost to De La Salle in the state playoffs, but they won their first 13 games of the season. One of the most incredible turnarounds in recent memory. They started off the game, a game that we broadcast on 1430 ESPN, started off the season, I should say, whipping San Joaquin Memorial 62-8. Right away, we knew something was different about this team. A huge offensive line, running backs galore, McKay Madsen, Jackson Sinfell, two dudes. Going to be hearing, talking with McKay Madsen soon. That team ran over its opponents. Coach Mike Jaycott and his staff did an absolute amazing job coaching these guys up. They were a machine. Right? Some team, we saw it on the field. Some teams were afraid to tackle those guys. They were so difficult to attack, so difficult to defend. So Clovis North, the incredible football season that they had, they're the number four story in the high school season. Number three, Bullard, Don Arax, from Bullard to CVC. On September 22nd, Bullard parted ways with Coach Don Arax after they started the season 1-4. But they had tight games against Clovis West and Clovis. They actually were leading Clovis West at halftime. Coach Arax had 178 and 128 and one tie career record, according to the Central Section historian Bob Barnett. And 28 years total coaching, 24 at his alma mater. It has those two section titles, D2 in 2009 and, that was in D1. That 09 team was a really solid team, beat a future NFL quarterback. In 2021, they won D2. However, Coach Arax didn't take him long. Landed a job at Central Valley Christian at CVC. Coach Mason Hughes stepped down. A little surprising to me, surprising to a lot of people, taking a job at COS. CVC is a D2 Central Section champ. They won the state title as well with Bryson Donaldson. Don Arax, from Bullard to CVC. Who would have thunk it? That's my number three story of the high school season. Number two, I remember a text I got on July 18th. Have you heard anything about Troy Gloss being a name for the head baseball job at Buchanan? What in the world? Caught me by surprise. What? Troy Gloss? Right? The MLB All-Star, the World Series MVP? World Series champion with the Angels, that trick taking over the program. Okay, that's wild. So I did some poking around, and sure enough, he was a candidate. And sure enough, he landed the job. Moved his family from San Diego with his wife and son. However, Troy Gloss didn't make it through the year. Lost further for the first four games. And looking back now, they were to some really good teams, to Liberty, eventual D1 champs, to Bakersfield Christian, to Frontier, to Bakersfield Christian again. And then he was let go after Clovis West lost 11-3 on April 26th. Lots to unpack with this one. Lots, right? Who's to blame? Blame admin. Blame the parents. I know some kids were suspended. Parents might not have been too happy about it, right? Admin. I mean, lots of stuff factored into that, right? Not one thing to blame. Probably a bad hire to begin with. Brad Fonts stepped down. So it's a high-profile job, right? Troy Gloss took the job. He thought he could run things his way. But as many people know out there, it's tough to parachute in and try to change a culture in that way. And it just didn't work out. What happened? Well, Coach Fonts and his trusty coaching staff took over. Jason Donald returned. Brian Marsubian returned. Austin Kemp. They won five games in a row right after that, including a sweep of Clovis North. They lost in the playoff game. However, those same coaches, Marsubian and Kemp, they're going to be returning to coach for the next couple years as well. So my number two story is Troy Gloss being the head baseball coach at Buchanan, not lasting a year, and Brad Fonts taking over. All right, so what is my number one story as it reached the end of my top six stories of the high school season? My number one story, drum roll, Vance Wahlberg, leaving Clovis West to become the men's basketball coach at Fresno State. This dominated talk for a while. It was an awesome, awesome story to follow, to watch, to talk about, to chat with anybody, right? Everybody knows the name Vance Wahlberg around the Central Valley. A lot of people know in the state. People know his name throughout the nation, throughout the country, and throughout the world as well. Done the clinics overseas. So how did this all come to fruition? Well, Vance has always wanted the job, always wanted the Fresno State job. He thought he had it back when Steve Cleveland got it. He thought he had it. And Vance admitted when he would drive past the Save Mart Center, he would wonder, what if? What would my life look like if I had gotten that job? Well, he has his dream job. He's 67 years old. He's the oldest basketball coach in Fresno State history. Right? How's Wahlberg going to translate to college basketball? He's going to translate very well. He has an exciting brand of basketball. We all know that. Built on hustle, getting in the rim, shooting threes, prideful in a good way. Right? Those are the things that Vance Wahlberg is going to bring to Fresno State and the Save Mart Center. It's a program that surely needs a jolt. They haven't been to the NCAA tournament since winning that Mountain West Conference tournament in 2016. In fact, they haven't won a conference title since playing in the WAC in 2003. So it's been a while. We are starving for an exciting brand of basketball. We the fans, yes, I am a fan. Vance Wahlberg is definitely going to fill that void. That is my number one sports story of the year in the high school ranks, translating to Fresno State. We know the great job that Vance Wahlberg did at Clovis West. Surely going to miss him on that sidelines. Fun to watch his teams, fun to watch him on the sidelines, but we are very excited that he is now the head men's basketball coach at Fresno State. All right. Thank you guys for indulging me in that. There's lots of things that I could have talked about, but those were my top six high school stories. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to be talking with Bullard softball coach Jamie Maxey on 1430 ESPN. One more time. All right, thank you guys for going in that last segment with my top six stories. Right, three were not too fun to talk about, but they were stories. There's stuff that's out there, stuff that people want to know about. Three positive stories. Clovis North football, Wahlberg. Clovis West girls basketball, all good stuff here. All right, so I've been wanting to have Coach Maxey on the show for a while here, and like I mentioned in my opener, I got to see her on Thursday. We had a really good conversation. She's coached at Bullard since 2001. 2001, yeah, I had that right in my head. I want to make sure on that. 2001, this season went 22-7, perfect 10-0 in CMAC. Most recent Central Section Championship title in 2022. Recently reached the 500 win plateau. 1998 national champ at Fresno State. That's quite a resume. I had to cut that off. There's a lot more I wanted to write, but I want to ask you questions here, Coach Maxey. First of all, thanks for coming in and taking the time to talk. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. This is fun. And I enjoyed this top six. That was great.
Good. I appreciate that. I know, obviously, being at Bullard, you have that connection to Coach Arax, and you mentioned off air just how many great talks you've had with him. It's very difficult for you guys share time, you know, during PE as well. So, yeah, I'm sure you got a lot of good memories talking with Coach Arax. So, how many more days until graduation? When's graduation for Bullard?
The seniors graduate on Monday. So, they're done. We have four more days of school with the underclassmen, and so we're at the end.
They're done. Are you done? You feeling okay? You feeling energized at the end of the year? What take a deep breath? Yeah, what do you usually do?
Not quite yet. You got to put the bow on the season, team parties. I run a little softball camp in the summer, so I'm preparing for that. But it's all fun. It's all good stuff. It's just a little more work and then a breath maybe mid-June.
And lots of grad parties to go to, right?
Yes.
You got any today? Usually they happen earlier, right?
Sometimes they mix them in early to beat the rush, but I don't have any today, so
got today off.
They're coming.
All right. So you guys went 22-7, undefeated in CMAC, lost to Buchanan 7-6 in the D1 playoffs. What's the best way, Coach, to kind of sum up your softball season?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say just a wonderful group of young ladies working hard together to accomplish some goals. Winning league is not easy. We have some really good teams in our league, so that was a great accomplishment. And pushing into the postseason, they're just fighters. They worked hard together, overcame some adversity. I would say just wonderful young ladies. That's the summation.
Who were some of your standouts? Who were some girls you relied on?
Our leadoff batter, she's been our leadoff batter for the past 4 years. Juju Martinez, unbelievable athlete, leader, kind of the catalyst for everything we did offensively. She is a record holder in the bullet record books for a lot of single season average. I think she's up there for hits, stolen bases, just phenomenal kind of legacy Bullard kid. Then we had our pitcher, Emily Hinchy. She did a great job for us. Her dad's a Bullard grad, just kind of roots in the community. Just a wonderful young lady, worked hard, overcame some injuries, but she did a really good job for us. Our catcher, Carissa Hawkins, another really, really, really solid athlete and great player for us all 4 years. Just kind of a cut above mentally. She's just a seasoned hitter and did great with our pitching staff. So,
Coach, you can identify really good softball players early, right? I'm sure you know the ones coming up. You mentioned the camp that you have. How important is it for you to develop players? Maybe I should ask the difference between starting a freshman or putting a freshman on varsity, mm-hmm. right? When you think they're ready, or maybe they're not ready, but you want them to get used to the varsity level of practice. How do you go about differentiating between putting a girl maybe on JV, but putting her up on varsity early?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the more challenging aspects of the job is making that decision of who plays on what team. But for me, it's always, defense is just a big deal to me. And if they can hold their own defensively, we had a freshman starting at third base, just really good defender. And the offense usually comes along. And that's kind of what I look at. If they're where they need to be defensively and we can then we can bring along the offense, that's what we look for. So, yeah.
So how difficult is it to get to a Central Section championship game, right? You mentioned the gauntlet of the playoffs. It seems like you're always running into a good pitcher in the playoffs, but how difficult is it to get to a title game and then try to win it?
Yeah, it's really hard. Somehow we did it back-to-back years in 2022 and 23. We had kids on the team who had never known anything besides getting to a Valley championship game. I think it it takes a lot of willpower, competitive mindset. It takes some luck. It takes, everybody kind of peeking together. There's just so many factors. It's not easy. But that postseason is so fun. You follow it, other teams and other sports, and it's just crazy things happen in a good way, and there's upsets, and that's what makes it the best.
Like with any sport, I feel especially, though, with baseball and softball has maybe more of the luck factor, right? Like football, a lot of times the better team wins because mm-hmm. of the physicality of it. Basketball, usually, the physicality can win out, or a team can get really, really hot, but usually they can cool down. But in softball, you could have a 0-0 game and then an error and then a bloop hit or something wild happens. Like, is that true? Like in softball and baseball, like you
yes.
never know compared to the other sports.
100%. It's inches. It's it's things. You always think, okay, I've been doing this for a long time. I've seen everything. Then you see something. I've never seen that happen. And I mean, we were down 6-0 against Buchanan in a quarterfinal game this year, and we scored 6 runs in the top of the 7th to tie it up. Just crazy. We ended up not being able to hold on. But those are the kind of things. It's just you don't know what's going to happen. You go into a game and you think, okay, this is kind of what we're thinking. And most of the time, it is not what you think.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very different. So
let's go back a little bit to that 03 team that won a Central Section uh-huh. title. You were pretty young in your coaching career, so to speak. Just walk us through that season, the types of players you had. How did you guys end up getting to the championship game, and who did you beat and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so we I believe it was Clovis West that we beat. Just kind of a feisty team, a lot of speed. We had a young lady named Megan Helon. She was just a phenomenal outfielder. And she she was a lefty, got on base, those kind of players. She now has a niece that's like 4 years old that's in our program. That's the fun stuff that I love. But that was an upset win team. I remember the young lady who ended up getting the game-winning hit. Her name's Corey Ha. I almost lifted her for a pinch hitter, but I decided to stay with her. She gets
wow.
It's just, you know, as a coach, you sometimes look great and sometimes it's just pure luck. And but I didn't know anything about coaching then.
Oh.
It was, you know, 2 years in and thought, well, this isn't too bad. This isn't that hard to get a Valley title. And little did I know that it's not easy at all.
Yeah, and I mean the goals are usually the same for a high level program like yours, right? You want to, you know, you want to win league and you want to win a Valley championship, right? So is that before a season, right? Do you take inventory of your roster and maybe you look at some of the other teams like, oh man, this team's got a stud pitcher, she's going to be tough to beat. Oh, this team's got a really good pitcher. Oh, this team's got a freshman that could pitch this year, right? Like, how do you assess what your individual goals are for your team every year?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, you do kind of know the lay of the land. You've scouted teams in previous years. You know what they have coming back, kind of what they can do, what you think could happen. You know, a lot of it's pitching in our sport. You kind of, that's where you start, and then you look at, okay, what's our offense? What can we do? What are some things that we are going to have to really work on to get better? You know, what are going to be our challenge games this year that are going to be really tough? And so, you know, that's part of the fun, and then designing practice around, okay, how are we going to make this this area better? And that's one of my favorite parts. Even as a player, I love practice. I love Coach Wright's practices were the best because they're so intense and tight. And so I try to model mine after that. But that's the fun for me in it is figuring out how to get from point A to point B. And you have a lot of days to do it. You practice for month and a half before you play a game, which is unique. Maybe not for high school sports, but it is, you know, it's a lot of time, which is fun.
What type of team building stuff do you like to do? I mean, every team talks about, you know, maybe they go on a retreat or you got a dinner or you have a little powwow or you get in a circle and moments like that. What do you guys like to do?
My players for the last several years, they love team dinners. They love getting together. We usually do it night before a game, and they have dinner together at somebody's home. The parents fix a meal or bring in food, and it's a great kind of community building for the team, but also the families get to be a part of it. Every practice, we end with what we call shout-outs. So we call out certain moments of practice that somebody did a great job. I love that. Just kind of ties that as practice is going on, they're looking for those great things. Someone made a diving play in practice. Someone put down a bunt. Someone was communicating, encouraging, you know, we shout those things out. So I like that, you know, just a day-to-day team building thing.
I love it too. That's good stuff. We're talking with Jamie Maxey, head softball coach at Bullard High School. I want to talk a little bit, coach, about how far equality in sports has come over the years. You played Division I softball for Marjorie Wright. We're definitely going to talk about that. But even in the high school, right, you've seen a lot of the, you know, attention to softball, to the girls' sports. You see it, you know, with Caitlin Clark right now, the amazing job she's doing with basketball. And, you know, I remember Brandi Chastain, right, the soccer, right, mm-hmm. scoring that goal. Just,
yes.
Right. So how have you seen equality in sports change over the years?
Yeah, so, I mean, just a real tangible example. When I was playing in college, you know, I think maybe the semifinal game of the College World Series and the championship were televised. Now you can watch college softball, you know, throughout the season. I mean, you can start watching college softball in February if you want, but you're definitely, I think the viewership's pretty strong when you get to the Super Regionals, and now with the World Series, there's just much more publicity for the sport, which is great. And the sport kind of has evolved to be a more offensive game. When I was playing, there was a lot of just pitcher's duels and 0-0 games, which I like, but it's not maybe the best for viewers. So, you know, the bats have a lot more life in them than when I played, and the ball is a little bit liver. So I think that helps people kind of enjoy the sport a little bit more. You see tons of home runs. I think about even the Oklahoma City, where they're playing the World Series. The venue when I played was wonderful, but there's, you know, people were sitting on berms.
Sure.
and now it's I don't know how many it seats, but it's grown incredibly. So it's just fun to watch, you know, women's sports with softball in general grow and improve and see people enjoy.
Well, when you went to Fresno State, obviously that was kind of in the heyday. Fresno State was, you know, dominating. Fresno B, you paid mm-hmm. a lot of attention to you guys as well. I remember the headlines on the top of the Fresno B about Fresno State softball. How were the fan support back then? You know what I mean? Like, do you felt like you guys put on a good show? You guys were exciting. That's why fans came. I mean, what was the atmosphere like?
Yeah. I mean, my very first game at Fresno State was we played UCLA. I was a freshman.
Oh, gosh.
And there was 5,600 people. They brought in bleachers. It was just an incredible atmosphere. Fresno State really was one of the first schools that were that there's tons of fans every game. And you go other places, you know, Arizona, they had a nice stadium, but there wasn't anything like what there is now. The SEC, there weren't huge stadiums. And so that was just, it was a great atmosphere. Fans, you know, you'd sign autographs for little kids after every game. It was so fun. It was just a wonderful experience. And now, you know, that happens across the nation. That's what it's more the norm in the sport, which is great.
I agree. This time of year with the softball, the College World Series of softball play, it seems like, you know, turn on the TV and Oklahoma would be hitting these three-run bombs. And you know, UCLA, I remember, was it Fernandez, right?
Yep.
There was their stud pitcher. She was like an icon, right, for softball players as well. All right, I want to ask you about – all right, so let's transfer now to your playing days at Fresno State. So you graduate from Bullard, right? How were you recruited by Coach Wright? Were you recruited by Coach Wright? They're like, hey, we want you to come play for us?
Yeah. Well, you know, she put on camps, and that's part of the reason I do to this day put on youth camps. So I went to her summer camps and just loved her camps and loved getting to know the players. And so it was, I think that was maybe the start. And then, you know, I remember her coming to my house and
nice.
Talking to my family. And she'd followed, you know, our travel program. It was one of the first ones in the area. And, you know, saying that she wanted me to come to Fresno State. And it was just such a great moment because I grew up thinking the world of her and the program. So
it was an easy decision.
Pretty easy, yeah. I mean, there's a couple other thoughts along the way, as there is when you're a high school senior.
Sure.
There's uncertainty. But, you know, staying home and playing for Coach Wright and at Fresno State was definitely what I wanted to do.
So you arrive on campus, you start start practicing with the team. Was there a specific moment you could point to, or is there some thoughts rolling through your mind like, man, these girls can play softball? Did you, you know, have a moment like that?
Yes, definitely. I remember stepping on the field, and, you know, I love defense, so that was always my favorite thing. I played third base, but the speed of the game is just it. You think you're playing fast when you're in high school, you think you're playing a high level at travel, and you are. But once you get to that college level, everybody's stronger, everybody's faster, everything happens so much quicker. And that was really what stood out to me. And I remember thinking, I can't do this. I can't play at this level. I'm, you know, it was fun while it lasted, but I'm done. But, you know, sure enough, you grow and you improve and good coaching and you push yourself. And so, yeah.
And then the 98 magical season, Amanda Scott and you know, Laura Berg and all these players. So, College World Series, championship game, where were you on the last out?
So,
what do you remember?
Yeah, I played third base on that team, and I can't remember. I don't think I made the last play. I remember it being thrown to our first baseman and, you know, just mobbing I don't remember exact details, but I do remember I made the first out of the game.
Okay.
A slapper from Arizona hit it to me and really, really fast. I remember just thinking, I got to get rid of it so fast. So that I remember. But what a fun experience. And, you know, and then coming home and having the parade from Fashion Fair to Fresno State Diamond and everybody. Just a lot of great memories.
Did you get a ring for that, obviously?
We did.
Where's your ring?
In a cupboard. In my house. not worn very often.
You don't have to wear it, right? You can show it off. Have you busted that thing out to your softball girls that they wanted to see it? Or do they even know about that? They even know about that time? Maybe they do
they
now that you're on the radio.
They may know, but I'm not great about talking about that. But I probably should more. They would enjoy it.
They would enjoy it.
They do like hearing old time stories.
I think that's a testament to you. You're a very humble person, Coach Maxie. All right, so got a couple minutes here. When did you first fall? You mentioned the camps, right? That, you know, Margie Wright, you know, discovered you, and you mentioned how much you loved it and looked up to it. So when did you first fall in love with softball?
I would say maybe 8 or 9 years old. You know, you're playing in the rec leagues and kind of like it, and then you're like, yeah, I'm okay, I'm pretty good at this. And I was a pitcher back then, and so, you know, I was just kind of the type of kid who I was able to focus, and I liked, you know, doing the extra work and pitching at home. And so I enjoyed it. My brothers played baseball, and then my sister started playing softball. And so it was just what our family did. And so we enjoyed doing that together.
It seems like, though, Coach, that your family wouldn't be that one that necessarily, you could tell me if I'm wrong, were necessarily like competing with each other all the time and crying and getting mad and throwing the ball at each other. It seemed like you guys were the type of family would encourage each other. Am I right on that?
Yes. And we grew up in the backyard playing wiffle ball with, sure, you know, on a cul-de-sac with our neighbors. Nick Papenduris, the Clovis North soccer coach, he's, you know, always over at our house. We're playing wiffle ball. So it started there. You know, you're doing those things, and then all of a sudden you're on a real team, and then it just gets more and more fun as you go.
That's awesome. We got about another minute here, Coach. All right, so you mentioned the camp that you have for the summer. You're looking forward to that. But what other summer plans do you have before you hit next year?
My sister and her husband, they coach with me. So my sister Karen and Mark Hetherington, they're coach. So we have a ton of fun coaching bowler together. And we're going to go. They have five girls. We're going, wow, with them and my parents to Colorado to watch the Giants and the Rockies play.
Right.
So that should be a fun time.
Awesome. Yeah. So five daughters. And they're, yep, all going to be softball players, right?
They're all playing. Yeah,
awesome.
They're all playing.
All right. The next generation is
right,
coming up.
That's right.
All right. Coach Maxey, it was a pleasure to have you on the show. Really good getting to know you over the last couple of days. You're a model of consistency and one of the great coaches out there, so I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Paul.
You bet. All right, it's Coach Jamie Maxey, head softball coach at Bullard High School. Coming up after the break, we got a couple Clovis North dudes in the house, McCabe Madsen, Braden Bitter. We're going to talk about their great track meet that they had last week, a little bit about their football season and what they got in the future. You're listening to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Hour number two, Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters. This is the last show of the school year. We're going to be returning on August 10th, a couple months off. Get to relax a bit while the high schools do their thing. Summer league football, summer league basketball, summer league baseball, softball, all the sports. So they'll be ramping it up this summer. And when we come back, we'll be hitting it hard as well. So if you guys are familiar at all with what's going on in the high school sports world, which many of you are, you know these two names very well. I got McKay Madsen and Braden Bitter here live at First String Sports. McKay is a junior. Braden is a senior. Last Friday and Saturday, was a big moment for both of these guys. They made their mark at the CIF State track and field event. McKay went first place, a double winner in the shot and discus, and Braden was second in the shot as well. So great story here. Football guys as well. And McKay, this is your second time on the show, right?
I think it's my third.
Oh my gosh. All right, so we're going to have to get you a little patch or something, you know, your third time on the show. So thanks, first of all, guys, for coming on. Is this a kickback Saturday? I mean, you guys have been going strong since last summer. So is this like one of those Saturdays like you can breathe a little bit and relax?
Yeah, I'd say it is. First of all, thank you for having us.
You bet.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been super busy. Every Saturday we've had, if it's not a meet, we've had practice and then a lift, some football stuff too with spring ball. But today I got to sleep in finally.
Oh.
I think I just have like a grad party later in the day, but I'm gonna go home and just do some cleaning in my room, take a nap, maybe watch a show.
So is waking up, sleeping in for you, I guess, like 7:30 on days like this, like
no,
you're probably so used to
today
getting up.
It was more, I woke up naturally, which is kind of rare, I'd say. But it was nice. Yeah.
Awesome, Braden. What about for you? What's your day look like?
No, it's a chill day for me. My wake up time is like 6:30, which is great. 6:30 is pretty late for me. I feel like I'm an early riser, but yeah, today I'm just chilling. Probably have to deep clean my room like McKay. But yeah,
you're gonna find stuff in places that you like, man, I haven't seen this in like 18 months. All right. How did that get here? Right.
Yeah. Lost some clothes for sure.
All right. So let's go back to last week. CIF State meet. You guys have been dreaming about this day for a long time. Now that we've had about a week to reflect on it, McKay, we'll start with you. You know, I've watched the videos. I saw you on the news. You know, saw the tweets out there. I mean, just did everything just play out in your mind like you had hoped, right? Like, how are you able to reflect a week later now on what you accomplished?
It's just, it was seriously a dream come true. Since last year's state meet when I got second, like, I said this already, but like, there was not a single day where I didn't think about states being in that same position but winning. And so that kind of ran through my mind every day. Not as like a, of course it was a motivator, but it wasn't like the end all. But it was just, it was always in the back of my mind, like pushing me, and like, it was kind of like too much, honestly, unhealthy amount, but I guess it got me to where I was. It's just been super great. Our goal really was to go just do our best, get everybody there what we could, and we didn't think we'd have a chance at actually winning as a team. That was just kind of just icing on the cake, getting second in the end. It's just crazy, and being a week later, I don't know, it hasn't really sunken in yet. We still have one more meet, actually. We're going to the national meet in Oregon.
Oh, in Oregon, huh? Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
So we're still training for that. That should be fun. One last ride together. It's just, yeah, it's been super great, and all the support we've gotten is amazing.
And, McKay, what just stuck out to me right now is you said the word hour, right? And you, the reason why you're saying that is because the guy sitting next to you talking about Braden. So, Braden, how do you quantify last week and how cool of a moment that was for you?
Oh, I mean, it was special. For two guys to get second place in the state, that's super. That's something that doesn't happen very often. And at the beginning of the season, you know, we thought we could have a state run. We unfortunately, some of our guys didn't fall through, but for me and McKay to come 1-2 in shot, and for him to go 1 in disc and score enough team points to get us to second place, it's really what we wanted from the beginning, and for it to come true, it's just, you know, it's special.
Yeah, I need to mention that you guys got a lot of points for your team. You guys ended up second, I think, with 28 points. Mm-hmm. So that sounds about right. And was it Long Beach Poly?
Yeah,
Long Beach Poly took the overall team championship. All right, McKay. You mentioned how, you know, you've thought about this for a long time and almost obsessive compulsive about reaching this goal. What if I told you a year ago, you've been on the show third time. So what if I told you last year that you throw the disc 106.8 and the shot 62.9.5, you would have said what?
206.8. I mean, it would have been possible, but to throw both of those marks at this state meet, I would have been pretty surprised. But just knowing the workload this season and the effort we put in, I'd say it'd be pretty realistic and deserving. To throw 206, like, my last year's PR was 191, so a 15-foot PR in one season is obviously great. I was always shooting for, like, maybe a 10-foot PR each season. But to throw that, and especially in the state meet, would be something crazy. So I would have said maybe you're crazy. If you asked me halfway through our track season, I maybe would have started to believe you. But it's just, yeah, it would have been outlandish for me.
Is the 200, is that like a benchmark? Like, if you're a dude and you throw 200, right, that's like you're a guy, right? I mean, what is that like nationally? What is that?
I think there's 6 guys over 200 this year, maybe less than 10. So it's a pretty big mark to hit. Like, the goal of the best throwers nationally throughout history, their goal is 70 feet in the shot and 200 in discus. And I think only less than 20 have ever done that. So going into next year, that's kind of a goal of mine. Already hitting 200. Now I just got to get the 70 in shot, which will be a challenge.
That'd be wild. Okay, another reference point here. What are, Braden, do you know, what are dudes throwing in college, or what's like Olympic level for comparison? Do we know?
I mean, they throw heavier implements.
Okay.
And those dudes are strong. Like, they are a different type of strong. So they're like, the really good guys are throwing 70, 73-ish.
Yeah.
They're all like, they do meters, so they're in the high 70s. Even hard for me to understand, but for a high schooler to throw 200 feet, like, I gotta talk on that. Like, every single practice he's throwing nukes out there, and it's like, it's normal to see 200 foot throws, and that's not normal, you know. It's very rare for a high schooler to throw 200 feet in discus, and for my teammate to do it, it's cool to see, you know, multiple times.
What was your goal before the year, Braden? And did you hit your goal? Like, did you feel like you had your best throws in your life this year?
My goal this year was my big one was to break the school record for shot put. And at the beginning of the season, you know, that was that was a goal that maybe I didn't really believe I could reach, but it was something that would push me. And I actually, I did, I threw 65 feet, which was huge for me. It was
freaking
a
nuke.
Huge PR. And, that was, it was super rewarding when, you know, the off season, all you're thinking about is your goals. You want to achieve your goals. And to finally do it, it's really special. It's huge.
Absolutely. All right. So walk us through though, the state meet. Unfortunately, last couple of years, it's lined up with the baseball championship. So I haven't been able to go, but I've been to four of them, I believe. And if you guys haven't gone, the listeners out there, you guys got to go one of these years. It's amazing. I mean, the event, the whole event at Veterans Memorial Stadium that our section puts on, and you know, especially the Clovis Unified, is next to none. There are people that are there like, this is a high school. I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. This venue is incredible. So walk me through, though, what is even, you know, lining up for discus. Let's go with discus. What is that like? You guys, because you do it on the far field, first of all, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what you guys call it? And then are you lining up behind a fence up and take your turn to throw? Is there like talking with each other? Is it all business? I mean, especially for you guys, McKay, what's it like for you during those times?
Yeah, it's a long day. It's a long process. You have to check in an hour before sitting there. You can't be on any electronics or anything, or you'll be disqualified, because that's like, you could, I guess, cheat if you look at your form or talking to your coaches over the phone. So you're kind of just sitting there with the guys. It's a lot of nerves everywhere, especially that Friday before. And then once you qualify for Saturday, you kind of know the guys, have been throwing with them for a while. But I'd say the throwers community is like super close and super supportive. It's way different than the runners and sprinters. So we're all like joking and talking before we throw and stuff.
Yeah.
And even throughout the competition. But yeah, we're kind of all huddled up, pushed along that baseball fence by Buchanan. There's a bench out there. You could sit on it, wait for your turn, but you just get called up, go throw, and then go shag your discus and hop back in line.
Well, did they put you in the order of how you guys threw in the prelims?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how that works?
For the state meet, it's how it worked. But like through the season, it's your whatever your top mark is, that's the order you're in. You're throwing last if you're the best throw.
Okay, mm-hmm. Got it. So how did you guys do in prelims?
I got Derek Smith of
yeah,
Buchanan.
We need to mention Derek.
Yeah, of course. Great. He's a great thrower. I've been throwing with him for years. He's going to UCLA now. So that's huge. He threw a huge PR in prelims, 206.10, I believe. Smashed their school record, put him at third nationally. So he was super pumped going into Saturday. So then I was ranked second behind him going into Saturday. And then –
So discus has been a battle all year, especially for like Coach Brazil and McKay. They know every day at practice, discus is a battle. I threw a PR to make it to the prelims for state, which was huge. Discus has been going rough ever since then, and then, you know, kind of popped one out of nowhere. So it was really cool for me. My goal was to just make it to the state meet for discus, and I didn't make finals. I think I fouled one that maybe would have qualified to finals, but you know, to make it there, I was stoked, because you know, discus has not always been my best friend. So
let's go to shot then, where both you guys were there. So what is that line like? It's later in the day,
mm-hmm.
right? It's in the middle, mm-hmm. right? We call it the pit.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get my terminology right. What is that like? Is it the same type of deal with the discus? You guys are kind of chummy with each other, or what's that like, Brayden?
Yeah, I mean, the throwers community is really cool. Everyone like kind of knows each other from whether it's online through Instagram, or we just see each other's throws, and everyone's really cool and really supportive. But you know, when it's time to throw, you know, everyone has to lock in mm-hmm. in their different ways. But you know, for me personally, I like, you know, joking around with friends, you know, keeps me calm. You know, nerves get high, especially at the bigger meets like the state meet. So, you know, just, you know, joking around with McKay, you know, settles the nerves. So,
yeah. All right. So I want to get to some funny moments in just a second. But what about the food intake, right? Like, what are you guys eating before and you guys just grubbing out after? I mean, what was that like?
Friday morning, our tradition, we go to Huckleberry's mm-hmm. Friday morning of that state meet as a whole team. So, like, our distance, sprints, jumps, we all went. That Friday morning I ordered the double bacon cheesy and then a side of stuffed cream French toast. It might have been a little too
much. And that's
much.
Okay? That's okay with everybody? Or it don't matter, huh?
It is.
It is what it is.
Because every time I've had a burger for breakfast, I've performed well. So Brazil's okay with it as long as I can still manage it. It kind of was a little bit heavy. So then Saturday morning, I just had the burger.
just the burger.
The best breakfast choice. But, I mean, it's worked and it's tradition. So
how about after, though? Are you guys super hungry after that? After state or not really?
Normally it takes a couple hours to, you know, like settle down. That's kind of like a football game. After football games, like after an hour, you know, we go to In-N-Out and pound like four double doubles or whatever it takes.
Seriously?
Yeah. Especially McKay. Speaking on the breakfast thing, he gets the burger and the French toast. Like, I'm pretty sure I blinked and the burger was gone. I've never seen anyone be able
inhaled
to eat
it.
Like McKay. And Coach Brazil would say the same thing. But yeah, I mean, after meets, it's not the first thing I think of.
Yeah, but we've gotten some food together. Me, Bitter, and Logan. We went to, what was it, like Butterfish or
yeah.
After that, and then after the state meet, I went with my older brother Keenan and Loey, and then we just went to McDonald's, picked up the food, went home, watched a movie. So it's kind of different.
All right, just for reference for those listening, I want to give height and weight. All right, we're gonna get into some feats of strength here in just a second, but McKay, what are you at right now?
I'm 6'2", 235.
Brayden?
I'm 6'2", probably like 240 right now.
He's 6'3".
He's 6'3". Let's round up.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll say 6'3".
All right, we can say 6'3".
Sounds cooler for me.
All right, funny moments in practice. You mentioned how tight you guys are, how you try to keep it loose. What are some funny moments that you guys have had? Or maybe even at a meet?
Yeah, I'll steal the best ones. But our teammate Logan Waite, who's had a great season as well, and really we wouldn't be here without Logan, you know. He's had some pretty funny we call him like the rage monster because he doesn't hate anyone more except for the toe board. he's probably broken like four toes by kicking the toe board, and he's the best yeller on the team after his throw. So, yeah, Logan's pretty much been all the funny moments. Whether it's him getting mad at his throw, that's not even that bad. Or
and you guys laugh at him, right,
yeah.
when he does that
oh, yeah.
stuff.
Of course.
And then that probably makes him more mad.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a goofball.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Okay, what do you got?
The team trips are always super fun. We all share a hotel room, and just some stupid stuff goes on, whether we're whipping each other with a towel or, I don't know, we're just making funny jokes or stupid videos. It's just I can't pinpoint one moment. It's just all like it's all
good.
It's all so fun.
It's all fun.
Great. Yeah.
Especially fun when you perform well at a state meet. All right. So right now we had this a little bit of a back and forth before we came on air. Who's benching more right now?
I'll go on to say
these are crazy numbers, guys. When you hear these numbers, you're not going to believe it. All right, go ahead.
Right now, McKay's probably got me in all of the lifts, but
no.
I think my closest one would probably be bench press.
I think we're about the same. We both can do probably 365. His shoulders have always been insane. He can shoulder press way more, but I think my squat's a little more, just being a little bit shorter, maybe that helps.
I think your
squat's
probably
6'3", a lot
more.
Right, we bumped you up to 6'3". All right, so what are your squat numbers out there? Let's go.
Man, we haven't one rep tested. I know I front squatted 405 a couple weeks ago. Could probably back squat somewhere in the fives. Power clean like 335-ish.
Yeah. Our we'd normally train with our football program, and our football program is big on front squat, so we rarely back squat. We do, but not as much as front squat. I'd say my front squat's probably like 375, around there. And then my bench is probably like 355. Power clean, I haven't power cleaned in a while, but I think I was like 295 to 305. So obviously there's a lot of improvements to be made. Just trying to catch up to the guy left of me.
we've always been in our own little group every day in PE with our coach Jay guy. He knows his stuff.
Oh yeah, he does. Yeah.
He's built us up. So
he did.
Yeah.
When did you guys take weightlifting serious? Like when you came in as freshman or sophomore year? Or
yeah.
Obviously McKay, you're younger, but
I'd say when I got pulled up that freshman summer, that's when we started lifting. I started lifting with the varsity guys and
okay.
built me up. And then after that freshman season ended, I put on 30 pounds. Yeah, it was a lot. I've kind of just maintained that.
Yeah. Yeah, mine was my sophomore year, right when we go up on varsity, so McKay's freshman year. That's when it like really started to get serious in the weight room. Some of those summer workouts were extreme, but, you know, we trusted Coach Jaycott, you know, as long as you finish the workout and, you know, it, you get as strong as hard you work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it really depends on you. And, you know, when you're surrounded by guys that work, you know, extremely hard, you want to work extremely hard. So mm-hmm. we have a really good weight program culture at Clovis North.
Oh, and it showed, all right? It showed in football. I want to hit football after one more question. All right, and if you guys went 1-1 in basketball, let's say 2-11.
Braden's taking it, I think.
I had some more basketball experiences. You know, I played with some of the Clovis West guys and some of the North guys for years, probably a little bit more than McKay. But, you know, McKay's there's no taking away from his athleticism. You know, I think it'd be a very close game.
All right, but maybe like a 11-8 kind of game.
Yeah, maybe even closer.
Team bitter wins.
In middle school, sometimes he was in eighth grade, I was in seventh grade. We'd scrimmage, and we were both big men, and we'd match up. We didn't really like know each other that well.
Yeah.
But we both made good plays.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to think like even back in elementary, we were competing against each other. And in volleyball, I was just about as tall as the net at the time, and I always hit open net. And McKay was the first ever guy to, you know, come up and block me.
Yeah,
which
you
challenged
him. I take so much pride in that.
And he was a fifth grader, and I was a sixth grader. So I was like, oh shoot, like,
a little fifth grade punk, get out of my way. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. So I mean, whatever he does, he's really good. So.
I agree. All right, so football, right? I mean, what a magical season, right? I mean, mm-hmm. if you think about it, for both of you guys this year. And Clovis North, you guys won the athletic supremacy for mm-hmm. Clovis
we
Unified?
We just did, yeah.
You just confirmed that? All right, that's a cool deal. All right, I mean, let's go back to football. I mean, 13-0 before you played De La Salle. Mm-hmm. Magical season. You beat Central in the Central Section Championship game. When you look back at that now, like McKay, what are like your first thoughts about the football season? What comes to your mind?
It took everything to do that. It took like honestly, it was a 4-year process growing up and coming from varsity or being on varsity that freshman year and with the senior class that is just now graduating their sophomore year. It's been a long process trusting Jaycott. Each year we had a better record than the previous year. And so just having faith in the program, trusting the process and the community we built around us and the parents and everybody bought in, especially this year. It was the most like chemistry I've ever played with. It was everybody was so focused and we all had one goal, and that was just to win every game we could as a team. And it was so unselfish. And I think that's what got us to where we were. And it's going to be hard to recreate that. We have a lot of younger guys and undeveloped talent this year, but I think we could still make something good happen.
Raiden, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I mean, it was my senior season, and I think looking over my senior year, I don't think I could have asked for a better senior year. It's unfortunate that we ended with De La Salle, you know, the 41 to whatever the score was that lost. A lot of people kind of, you know, highlight that as the highlight of our season, like we were fraudulent because we lost to De La Salle, but we went 13-0. You know, I think everyone in the Valley has to put some respect on our name, and, you know, like McKay said, we had a great support system. Everyone bought in, and that's why we were so successful. And next year, I think they'll be just fine. So,
you guys got the rings yet? It's been
we
delivered.
Did.
When they get delivered?
A couple months ago, but they're fat.
Yeah. Are they?
They're heavy.
They're beautiful.
Yeah. Sure, you guys didn't bring one.
I should have
checked it out. All right. So, how do you describe them? Like,
oh,
big
man,
old diamond in the middle, or what? What's
big
it look
old
like?
Rock. It's black. Got some. Or it's silver. Has black diamonds all over it. Blue CN diamond in the middle. On the side it says 13-0 Valley champions. Other side says 5-0 track champions.
You get your name like in the
name
inside,
and
right?
Position. Yeah. Shows what we did, and that's something I'll always be proud of.
Yeah.
Obviously we have bigger goals. He's going on, and he'll be an NCAA top competitor for shot put. And but this is just one step, I guess, in our lives, I think. Yeah.
What's the hardest hit you guys delivered this year? Is there one that you specifically remember?
I'm going to have to go back to my junior year. I was playing D-end, and there was a Clovis High game. I don't know what was going on, but it's the most emotion I've played with. And coming off the edge, I don't know what was going on with me, but it was good. It was good emotion. And I hit the quarterback a couple times pretty hard. I think he got sent out, but I'm not sure. But it was definitely it's you know you hit him hard, and like I didn't even really feel the hit. It just happened. So yeah, probably my junior year was my hardest hit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you got one.
The one that I distinctly remember was in the championship game against Central. Braylon Hall did a little hitch route. He's a great player. He's going on nice college. He did a hitch route, and then I just drove on it and just smacked him to the ground, like, really quick. I don't know if it was, like, the hardest one, but I just remember, like, the crowd, like, oohs and ahs, and that kind of just, like, set the tone for the rest of the game, and solidified, I guess, our win. So that was super cool.
I remember that one, too. And, again, when I asked McKay about his favorite memories, he's not talking about himself, which he very well could, so I will. So in that championship game against Central, 3 touchdowns, mm-hmm. right? On what, 6 carries?
My first 3 carries were all touchdowns.
First 3 carries were touchdowns. I mean, just one of the great moments in Central Section history. McKay Mattson. All right, we got a couple minutes here, boys. McKay, all right, so now I got to update this because when I Googled it last night, it said 16 D1 offers, but we're going to cross that out. We're going to put 21. All right, so you got the Ivy League schools after you, UCLA, Washington, BYU, Arizona Air Force, of course, Fresno State, a bunch more. When are you going to make your decision?
I've been planning, like, before season starts. I have one more visit to BYU coming up soon. We'll see where it goes from there. But all of them have been great opportunities. All of them have been wonderful blessings just for the hard work I've put in and what Heavenly Father has blessed me with. It's just been super great being able to have these opportunities and know that it's a good problem to have. Not knowing where to decide yet. You can't go wrong with any of them, really. So we'll just see what I like best. A lot of thought and prayer will go into it, and whichever works out, I think will be great.
So you're thinking August, right? You said before the season, maybe late July, before football season?
As of now, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brayden, Fullerton?
Yeah.
Track and field?
Yeah.
How cool is that going to be? How excited are you for that?
I'm stoked. It's going to be different, you know, going away from home. I'm sure mom and dad will miss me just as much as I'll miss them. But, yeah, I mean, great coach. Really, the coach is the reason I went there. Beautiful campus. I'm really excited to start my college career. So.
All right, last thing, boys. This has been a lot of fun. McKay, you know, you talked after the event last Saturday how much this guy – meant to you. For those that haven't heard it, just the great relationship that you guys have and how you iron has sharpened iron. Just talk about McKay, talk about this guy here.
Yeah, just the years coming. I think I brought him out. He did track and field in elementary school, but I brought him back out my freshman year. I wanted a buddy to throw with along with me and Logan Waite. So brought him out, and he was new to it, disc. Still frustrating then, but shot put. I mean, he's just a mountain of a man, and so he could throw it. Our technique was terrible. We did the glide then. Last year, we finally switched to the spin, but we were both pretty even the whole year. We kind of have been our whole careers, I'd say. It's just every memory, every trip, every practice. It's always been something to look forward to. It's never something you dread. You wake up on Saturday morning, yeah, it's early. You want to sleep in, but go into track practice, you know you're getting better. You know you're getting your teammates better. It's an unmatched, and I think with Coach Brazil and his knowledge and him being arguably like the best coach in the nation, I'd say, it's like a family pretty much. I'm definitely gonna miss him next year. It'll be different. Still goals in mind. But this season will be unforgettable.
Brayden, what can you say about the guy to your left?
Oh, I mean, he's pretty special. I mean, you've named off his stats, you know, 3 touchdowns in the Central game, you know, double state champ. This guy next to me, he's a true champ. So I'm going to miss him next year. We've had so many memories. And, you know, I'd like to thank him, you know, because he's the reason I came out for track and field in the first place. And now I'm going to college for track and field. So McKay is really has been a blessing for me. And a great man to call my good friend. So I'm very lucky to have him. And now that I'm not in high school anymore, I can say, you know, it's going to be McKay Mattson for the next year. So
good. So when is graduation? When's graduation day for you?
Wednesday, June 4th?
Yeah. June I think 4th? It's Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's the first, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, Tuesday? Maybe two. Whatever your parents say.
That's crazy that I don't know when it is.
Yeah, well, it's Tuesday. All right, so Tuesday. Yeah, that's the 4th, so it's June 4th. All right, good stuff as always, guys. It's been fun, you know, following you in football, calling your games in football, and then seeing you guys on the news and reading about you guys doing great things at the state track meet. So thanks, guys, for coming in. A lot of fun. Yeah,
thank you so much for having us.
You bet. All right. Good guys. Good guys to root for sure. All right, well, coming up next, we're going to be wrapping the year up with Gabe Camarillo. You're listening to 1430 ESPN. Part of the show, you guys can go to 1430ESPN.com, go to podcasts on the Central Valley Sports Report, and go back and listen to any show on 1430ESPN. And this is my last show, Gabe. My last show. Have a little summer break and bring it back on August 10th. And obviously, we're going to be broadcasting high school football games as well. So I definitely want to end this school year talking sports with you, my friend, sportscaster at Fox 26.
Thanks
right now
for having me.
Home field advantage and all that good stuff. So what's the hot story right now?
Probably what Fresno State's doing a little bit. It's interesting how they, this time last week, you know, they needed 3 wins in 2 days. And I thought that was somewhat possible. I mean, every time you lose the first game of a double elimination, you're just like, you have to have everything go your way. And I think everything went Fresno State's way in the Mountain West Tournament, and now they have to have that same thing happen again against a higher caliber of opponent, because you're not playing against, you know, your sub-500 Air Forces in San Jose State. You're playing against a 40-win San Diego and a 40-plus win Santa Barbara. So, like, that's probably the hot story right now. It's Fresno State once again facing elimination in 4 straight games, and if they win 4 straight, then they'll be going on to the next round.
Yeah, last night's game, I listened to it on the radio. They lost 9-6, obviously, but hey, it's almost like we got them where we want them, right? Those 4 elimination games were fun. It was almost like, don't let Fresno State win 1. Okay, they let them win 1. Don't let them win 2, because when they get hot, they're going to be tough to beat. All right, here we go, 3, and then the final game was pretty darn awesome. All right, and then our guy, Murph Gray,
yeah,
what a performance in that Mountain West tournament.
That's why they won 4 straight, was Murph Gray. Because, I mean, you beat New Mexico behind a great start from Jake Riding, and then Noah Beal does his thing against Air Force, and so then you're in that championship matchup against San Jose State, and you're down 5-1. And that seems like that's the end of it, and then Murph Gray hits the game-tying double down the right field line, then the game-winning double down the left field line, and then he hits, like, you know, home runs and doubles and, like, a bunch of different fashions over the last 3 games. So, well-deserved tournament MVP. But for this baseball team to continue to go far, it needs more than Murph. It needs more contributors up and down the lineup. A lot of guys left on base last night against Santa Barbara. And then pitching-wise, you got to get the Gauchos out of the innings. You know, you have 2 outs on them. You got to get that 3rd out. You can't give up 3-run bombs with 2 outs. You can't give up. I mean, there was 3 runs that Santa Barbara scored in the 5th inning on 2 outs that ended up being the difference, 9-6. So
yeah, you need those shutdown innings. You need to get those clutch hits as well. 1 o'clock, right? Or 1 o'clock today against San Diego. All right, let's transition to some high school stuff here, Gabe. Let me set up this scenario. Again, we're going to talk about our top 5 or 6 stories. I think you got 6. I upped it. I went to 6. So top 6 stories in just a second. These two scenarios that I'm going to mention right now were part of my top 6 stories. But Gabe, at this time last year, if I asked you, what were the odds of this happening? Don Arax is let go after going 4-1 at Bullard. CVC wins the D2 state title, section title in the D2 state title. Mason Hughes steps down and Arax takes over at CVC. Or Troy Gloss is named the head coach at Buchanan, let go after underperforming season, replaced by Brad Fonts and his assistant coaches. astronomical odds, one in 527,000. I mean, what in the world?
That was a lot of crazy stuff.
Crazy stuff. If I would have said that last year, what would you have said?
Well, I would have stopped you when Don Irax got fired, because I know he had his battles with the school district, but I never felt that that was going to lead to a mid-season termination. But then that happened, and they went 1-4, but also I believe they played against Clovis West.
Correct.
And Clovis High, and you know, these really good track schools. So that can be excused, I feel like. It's not worth a firing. I mean, that was obviously probably more to the story than just performance on the field. I mean, I think that's something that we can look into later this year as we get into next season. You know, what does Arax do at Central Valley Christian? Because if he does continue to win after all the talent that left the Cavaliers, that says that, number one, Arax is a good coach, and number two, Bulla probably made a big mistake. Because if Arax is good enough to win at Central Valley Christian, given all that's leaving that school, Donaldson, Cruz, you know, Hughes.
Couple linemen, yeah.
Linemen, you know, if they still win and they go far in the playoffs, Arax did a heck of a job. He could be coach of the year. Now, the other part of that, the Troy Glaz hire,
I never saw coming.
And I definitely didn't see him getting fired coming. I mean, at least give him a year. But then when Brad Fons comes in and wins five in a row, then it's like, well, I guess that was kind of a good move. Hindsight's 2020. So, yeah, I wouldn't believe a single word he just said if you would have told me this on June 1st, 2023.
All right. So let's march now into your top stories of the high school season. I mentioned mine. Just go with yours, and then we'll talk about it a bit.
So I went this with a different route, story, right? Like highlighting what makes Valley Athletics special.
Got it.
One part of it is the family part of it. Hey, Dad, you want to have a catch? There were three sets of father-son combinations that won a big trophy. You got Tyler Hughes and Mason Hughes that won a state championship together. Special stuff. Special stuff. You had Connor and Tony Amundson win a Division I Central Section boys basketball title together, and also McKay as well. McKay and Connor and Tony, only time that they could be on the basketball court together, because last year Connor was hurt. They win a Central Section title and upset, I think that's the right word to use here, mm-hmm. upset a favored St. Joseph team that was ranked top 10 in the state for most of the season. That's an amazing story. And then we almost had the trifecta with Tyler and Kevin Patrick, but honestly, you could argue they won the track title. Yeah. They beat Bullet in an amazing game. And, you know, I felt, got the most of this senior season for Tyler. Tyler boosted his stock. I mean, dude's going to be a star at Fresno State. We all see that now based off of the two-way power that he supplied for Clovis West. Just three sets of father-sons that went out on top. Maybe for Clovis West, not entirely on top, but heck, I mean, they were up 1-0 on Tuesday against the number one team in Northern California. So, I mean, arguably, I'd say they finished their season playing some of their best baseball. Number five, it pays to be patient. I mean, another coach who used to coach his son, Michael Jaycott. I think Jaycott Jr.'s senior season was one to forget. I mean, COVID, cancellations, teams, the players quitting the team, teams beating them 69-0. It got bad. And you were like, okay, can Michael Jaycott take Clovis North from the doldrums to a champion? And he did that over a couple seasons. It pays to be patient, you know? Buchanan wasn't patient with Troy Glaz, but Clovis North was patient with Michael Jaycott, and it paid off in a Central Section Championship. And not just any Central Section Championship, but I'd argue the most impressive one of all the sports, because they went 13-0 and beat Central twice. Just dominated everybody. I mean, they beat multiple teams multiple times. And even if they lost 41-0 to De La Salle, we're talking about Central Valley high school sports. In the Central Valley, arguably they were the most dominant team across any sport that we saw this season. Number four, I'm going to make them have exceptions, she said yesterday. Talking about her teachers giving her homework that she can't do because she's at the U.S. Women's Open. Chowchilla High School freshman Asterisk Tally is kicking major butts at her first major, the U.S. Women's Open. That's a huge high school sports story that I honestly don't think we'll see soon. I mean,
no.
This is our version of Tiger Woods.
It is. Absolutely. Absolutely. And she wasn't on my list, Gabe, but I talked about her in the opener. Absolutely. Great call.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's our version of Tiger Woods. Think about how good you have to be to be that good at 15. You have to have so much practice, starting when you're 3 years old probably, and then just going on and hitting up the Leafs with your dad, and her dad's such a big figure in her life. We've talked to him a lot of times on Fox 26. Number three, and this is like, you know, so the first three were about kind of competitive stories, right? A championship won, games won with fathers and sons, Astros tally, going far in this U.S. Women's Open. These next three are more about human interest, returning the best of the West. Brandon Simon walked into a tough situation at Edison High School where the previous coach was allegedly embezzling money from the Booster Club, and I think a lot of people have talked about that. You also had vandalization of their facilities. Some people robbed pitching equipment, bought baseballs. Just they multiple times targeted Edison. Just external factors, whether it's crime or just coaching. It's just different stuff kept Edison down for the last year and a half. And then Brandon Simon comes in, and they win seven games in the CMAC. I think they finished, what?
7-8.
Third in the CMAC, which is pretty good. And definitely better than they have in the years past. They turn their season around. They won some playoff games. They have the trajectory for Edison up high, despite, like I said, all of this craziness happening. I mean, it's hard to explain the embezzlement, robbery, the different scandals that have hit them that have not been their fault, in honest truth. Like, you know, they haven't asked for these things to happen. It just happens to them. And they somehow overcome those that adversity and those odds. Speaking of overcoming odds, these last two stories are stories about fighting cancer, you know, the biggest fight you can have in life. There's an El Diamante track and field coach named Mary Garcia who, I think about this time last year, found a mass the size of a grapefruit near her heart. And it was a tumor that she had to have replaced. They weren't sure if she was going to make it back to coach the El Diamante track and field team in the season, and she ended up making it by following three words. Three words of her story: just keep running. So Mary Garcia is a coach that had to overcome cancer. But the top high school sports story, and we're talking about overcoming odds, we're talking about making memories for a lifetime with playing for your father or building a program up that was once a champion, you're making it a champion again in Michael Jacot's case. What about if you weren't sure how much time you had left on this earth to finish your high school career? Malachi Rios, what a story that was to follow on Thursday night. He goes to his graduation, and that's just the end of a long journey. You know, back in November 2022, he is diagnosed with testicular cancer that's reached his lungs. It looks grim. But the cancer goes away, and he's able to work out for his senior football season until the cancer comes back in August and he realizes he has two games left to play in his high school career before he has to go to San Francisco for chemotherapy. He catches a touchdown, Paul, in one of his last games as a Reedy Pirate. With the cancer still inside him, with, you know, the pain that he's going through, he catches a touchdown for Reedy. And then, you know, the chemotherapy can't work. So what they do last month was they have this photography drive where they charge you $65, but they take 10 great photos of you. And that, along with a lot of generous donations from GoFundMe, helped Malachi go to Mexico for this cutting-edge therapy that wasn't available in the United States because chemo wasn't going to work anymore on Malachi. He goes to Mexico, and it helps him walk at his graduation two nights ago. Malachi Rios honestly is my top high school sports story because here's a guy that didn't let cancer stop him from living out his high school dreams.
Amazing. And if you Google it, as I did just now, great stories up on the websites. And you guys did a story on
him as
well.
Yeah, one of our reporters did a story about the drive last month that helped him go to Mexico.
Awesome. Awesome stories. And, yeah, you know, Malachi Rios, he's one of the shining stars in the Central Valley. You know, for him to battle cancer and want to play football at the beginning of the year and having to stop and all that. I mean, absolutely great. Great stuff, Gabe. Really appreciate you bringing up those stories. I think we did share a couple, right? You mentioned the, some of the things that didn't go Troy Klaus's way, Don Arax, and just how life is, right?
Yeah.
How, every day is certainly a blessing. Every day that we can cover sports and highlight these great student athletes that we have. Human interest stories are the best, and I'm glad you're able to do that a little bit more with your new gig at Fox 26 and talk about the humanness of sports.
I think that's kind of, you know, part of what high school sports is in the Valley when we know the people that are coaches. A lot of people know Brandon Simon because they either played with him at Edison or they coached him at Edison or they watched him at Edison and then they watched him go through the minor leagues and they know him from his Clovis North assistant days. I mean, they know that he's done a good job at Edison and they know that he's had to face a lot of adversity during his time there. And then obviously with Mary Garcia, maybe people don't know Mary Garcia, but that's the cool part of my job now is to share that story and then people realize, wow, like El Diamante has a long-distance running coach that has beat cancer, and cancer the size of a grapefruit that was near her heart, just by following those three words, just keep moving. So, I think high school sports has a lot of different functions. It entertains us. It also motivates us. And I think that's one of my favorite parts about following it. So,
absolutely. There's something different about the Central Valley. I've said it many times on the show because it's true. Central Valley people come together a lot. We root for each other, right?
Yeah.
And in the case with a lot of kids out there and a lot of coaches, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We see how they perform on a field or what they do on a court, and we know that each kid has a story. So happy that you're able to bring that out. All right, Gabe, let's talk about some maybe too early football rankings. Got about 5 minutes here. I got a little list here. We can kind of go off this list. Clovis North, Clovis East. A little bit of talk between those two. Who's going to go into next season, 2024, as the top team? I think you got to say, hey, everything's going to run through North until they lose to a team in the Central section. They got to be your number one, right?
I think so, but also they've lost a lot of talent. The offensive line was really the most underrated part of that team. They were a complete team. The defense was solid. The offense was unstoppable because they ran the ball whenever they wanted, and they picked up 5-6 yard gains. Can you do that without your Washington offensive lineman or without some other all-track selections up front? We'll see. But Clovis East has picked up a lot of just talent in the transfer portal. I would have them as number one, honestly.
All right.
I mean, but it's also like a couple years ago, we picked Clovis High School as number one because they were the trendy pick. They had a couple D1 guys on their team like Clovis East does, and obviously Clovis High didn't meet expectations. This could be like a Clovis East. It could be like Clovis West last year. Everyone picked Clovis West last year to be number one, and then they go 6-6. So is it going to be number one? Is that what we want to give to Clovis North, have them be number one preseason, and then maybe they fall short because of the pressure maybe?
I remember at this – before the season, I think a lot of us had Clovis North maybe around the 3 or 4 range, maybe the 5 range, and Clovis West was – everyone's clear-cut number one last year. So here we sit. So Ty Miller, quarterback, he's going to be a 4-year starter this year for Clovis East, committed to UC Davis. That's a good get. Mm-hmm. Ty Miller's amazing. Harold Duvall, that dude's picked up a lot of scholarship offers this summer too, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has.
Did Fresno State offer Harold or not?
They have.
Okay.
They have, but I'm hearing he's pretty warm on Colorado State. I think there's also some linemen that have come to Clovis East as if they needed more big linemen to transfer in. They got some more, so that's going to help them protect Miller and open up holes for their returning running back duo of Graves and Slocum. So, remember this. East didn't get a chance to come back against Clovis North in the semifinal. They got that chance taken away thanks to a penalty. If they get the ball back, Paul, with 2 minutes left in the semifinal,
they might have
down
driven
6
down.
Points. Yeah. They might have driven down. They would have driven down because the momentum was all their way. I really think you could have East North 1 or 2, but I would put East 1 right now. But I also don't want to put that pressure on them because we know the last two number ones we picked haven't panned out.
All right, I'm going to check on Max Preps when those two teams play. And then Liberty Bakersfield and Clovis are the next on this list. I don't know. We could flip-flop that just like we could flip-flop East and North. Clovis, man. All right, I'm going to give you – we got a couple minutes here, Gabe, but Deegan Rose, gosh, that article that I retweeted about when John Canzano came here, everybody's hot and heavy after Deegan Rose, and for good reason. Again, he's only going to be a junior, but this dude is going to be a high-level D1 guy too.
I really think they could have beat Liberty last year in a quarterfinal, but only thing that stopped them was – the defense gave up too many big plays to the Patriots. If Clovis' defense, and they got a reinforcement, just look up on Twitter, Carlos Young goes from Sanger to Clovis, lockdown corner. If that defense is reinforced, I think Clovis should be in the top three conversation. Because with the offense, as long as Deegan's at the controls, it's going to score points. And whenever they're within 5 yards, you know they're going to score because Deacon's just going to run it in with his big 6'3", 220-pound frame.
You got that play dialed in.
So I would have Clovis at 3. I would have Central at 4 and Liberty at 5, although Central's quarterback situation is very murky. Everything else is good for Central. Good returning skill position players, some key pieces on defense coming back. But at quarterback, they lost that guy to lost O'Reilly to Memorial. They lost David Bell also to Memorial. I would have Memorial in your top 10 just based off of that fact and the fact that Rich Tuman is the new coach there and he's known for his high-octane offenses. So I would put Clovis 3, Central 4, pending a quarterback. Whoever is the quarterback is going to be somebody new. Liberty could be 5, Frontier could be 6. I'd put Memorial 7. And then after that, it's kind of a crapshoot. So.
Well, for Memorial, Rich Tuman is a great coach. He did a great job at Lamar. You know, I don't want to fall in that trap again like last year, right? We had Memorial ranked pretty high, and then we saw what Clovis North did in that first game, 62-8.
Jalen Patterson, we never saw play before. We've seen O'Reilly play before, and there were some turnover problems, but those first four games where Central was hot, he was the quarterback. So, I mean, there's that. Also, Memorial had like 9 underclassmen on defense starting, so I assume they're going to be better. A year older, a year more experienced. So I'm just high on Memorial, and knowing that Sanger has lost a lot of talent too, I think that could be a big battle for the CMAC title between Memorial and Sanger, at least closer than it was last year.
Yeah, lots of moving parts, Gabe, heading into next year. You did say I think you probably did on purpose. You did say transfer portal, right, in high school. That's another topic for conversation. But we're going to be definitely keeping our eyes on lots of things this summer, probably attending a few 7-on-7 things, talk to some coaches. We can't wait for high school football to start. All right, so I checked it. Max Preps, check it out, Gabe. So Clovis North and Clovis East, guess when they play? Last game of the season.
That's great.
Regular season. So
As
they should. On Max, according to Max Preps, it's on November 1st at Clovis East. So that'll be at La Monica Stadium. So good job as always, my friend. That is a wrap for at least me for a couple months, returning August 10th. But it's been a fun year. I know it's a transition year for you as well, but we'll definitely be keep in touch and talking about high school sports.
Anytime, Paul.
Good stuff. All right. So that's it for me, folks. Thank you guys for a tremendous year. Thanks to all the coaches and ADs and student athletes that I was able to talk with. Central Valley's different, man. I love our kids here. You guys love your kids. We have great, great teams to be proud of, great players to be proud of as well. I want to definitely thank First String Sports for a great year. They've been my day one sponsors. Thanks to these, Air Plumbing and Heating, Jamie Maxey for coming on the show, McKay Madsen, Braden Bitter of Clovis North, and, of course, Gabe Camarillo. Have a great summer, everyone. Thanks for all the encouragement, and we'll talk to you soon.
Men's Apparel and Bowman and Associates. Listen to the San Francisco Giants all season long on 1430 ESPN. Enjoy the sound of John Miller calling a home run.
Begun swing, and it's a high drive into left.